Hi guys, it's Carl here from CaminoWays.com. Today I am joined by Graeme Simsion and Anne Buist, two best-selling authors who came together to collaborate on a brand new book called Two Steps Forward. It's a love story that takes place on the Camino de Santiago that circles around two main characters, Zoe and Martin, and some interesting people that they meet along the way. It's an excellent book. It's full of laughs, full of great Camino detail, and it's just a whole lot of fun. So without further ado, let's get the podcast started. Okay, so hi guys, thanks very much for joining me on the podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time today.
Delighted to be here.
Excellent, excellent. So guys, can you just tell me a little bit about yourselves? I suppose we'll start with you, Graeme, and then you can follow up, Anne.
Okay, well, I'm a former information technology consultant who at the age of 50 decided he'd like to be something else. So I spent about 5 years trying to be a screenwriter. When nobody wanted to make my movie, I rewrote it as a book. And from that point on, I've been a novelist. And I've had a best-selling novel with The Rosie Project and The Rosie Effect, which have sold, and The Best of Adam Sharp, which have sold about 5 million copies around the world. And then I've written this novel now with my wife, Anne Buist, Two Steps Forward.
Excellent. And that's brilliant. It's a very strange evolution going from such, I suppose, a tech person into writing. And that's really interesting, Graeme. Maybe something we can get into a little more a bit later. But obviously, we do have two guests with us today because this is a collaborative effort. So, Anne, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background?
Yes, well, look, I've wanted to write since I was 8 years old, but I figured that wasn't going to pay me enough money to keep me in coffee, really. So I did medicine and became a professor of psychiatry in the interim, and have been working as a perinatal psychiatrist and still do. But when we walked to Camino, I had a bit of a literary epiphany and decided I wanted to give it another go, and had already tried getting a couple of manuscripts, which got to the last phase at Random House. But after the Camino, gave it another try and now write psychological thrillers.
Excellent, excellent. And your work, Anne, in psychiatry, do you think that that's something that really helps you when it comes to developing characters and understanding people for your novels?
Oh, look, absolutely. When Graeme was, and it helps because we plan and research our books together, even the ones we write separately. And it helps with motive, with the Rosie Project, the Rosie character, there was sort of the question of who would be attracted to Don Tillman. And so I didn't really help with the Don Tillman character, but I did help with the Rosie character.
Okay. I suppose that leads me nicely into what was going to be my next question. You've already somewhat answered it. I was going to ask you, is this the first project you've worked on together? Now, obviously, if you're doing research together for all of the books, well, the way I'd phrase the question is this the first collaborative effort you've worked on in terms of the names on the cover of the book?
This is the first time that we put both our names on a piece of writing. But as Anne explained, we've always planned together. We're always each other's first and last readers before it goes to publication. So it's only that drafting stage, which is what people think about when they think about writing, but in fact only takes up for us maybe a month, 6 weeks. It's only that stage where we tend to work by ourselves on our books. So it was really just one further step forward for us to work collaboratively on that stage as well.
Okay, excellent, excellent. And I think some of our listeners might be thinking to themselves, my God, if I had to work with somebody that I lived with or my partner or my best friend on a project like that, I'd tear my hair out. But obviously it's something that really works with you guys. So what's the dynamic when the two of you are together, working together?
Okay, I mean, call us crazy, but when we got married, we thought that what we would do was work on, you know, do things together that we love doing. And we both love writing. It's a privilege that we both get to write, I think, because we've had other careers before that. This is the dream job. We get to do that together. So what, in the research, of course, walking the Camino, what more could you ask? But the practicalities of working together, go Anne.
Well, in this book particular, it was a delight because we really loved the Camino, and we ended up walking it a second time, essentially for the book, but because we enjoyed it as well. And writing it was a little bit like going through your photo album. It was reliving your holiday. And the funniest thing is that I will say to Graham now things like, "Oh, remember so and so in such a village," and he'll turn to me and say, "Anne, that's the fiction version. That's not what actually happened."
Yeah. In fact, what we did was we used exactly our itinerary day to day, or so close it doesn't matter, as the basis for the book. I mean, the novel is absolutely fiction, but you need to have an itinerary, you need to have a route, and we just said, okay, we'll take the one we took. That makes it easy. So the season, everything.
Yeah, that's amazing, and I suppose that was really good to have a template or a blueprint or a map that you could, I suppose, use for the trajectory of the storyline. It's funny that you mentioned that about getting confused with the fictional characters, and it's often something that I think people do when they're used to telling a story of an event that actually happened in their lives so many times and they're embellishing it to make it sound more interesting. They often remember fictional details themselves as if they really happened in real life, and that's a really interesting phenomenon, I think.
It's quite shocking when you go back and you see an actual photo or video of what you did, and that's the hard evidence, and you say, oh, okay.
Absolutely. So, guys, how did the idea for Two Steps Forward come about? I think you mentioned that you had already done a Camino and then you went back to do the research. So did the idea sort of come to fruition on the first Camino trip? Was it planted there?
So it was certainly planted there. The first Camino trip, as with the second, we started off in Cluny in central France. So already 1,100 kilometres. So, you know, 650 miles from St. Jean-Pierre-de-Port before the most popular Camino Frances actually starts. So we had, you know, 1,100 kilometres in 7 weeks or so just to get started. And we started in February that first time. And that first 2 weeks, we were on a feeder route for a feeder route. And we only saw one other walker by day or by night. And that guy was a young Belgian man, 19 years old, who walked with us for a while. And he learned a bit about us. And after a while, he said, you know what? He said, what you guys ought to do, because we'd both told him we were aspiring writers. He said, you should write a book set on the Camino. You should write it together. And then he said, and you know what? It should be a love story about old people, because he figured we were a lot older than he was.
So that's excellent. And before you did the Camino, guys, were you avid walkers?
Not really. Look, our first walk, which we took our teenage children on, was in Ireland, in fact.
Oh.
The Kerry Way. But other than that, we hadn't really done anything very much. Shorter walks. So this was really, and we thought originally we would only do the first 2 weeks from Cluny to Le Puy. But we were going so well and enjoying it so much, we thought, oh, we'll just do the next section. And then by the time we got to St. John and found that there was a coastal route, this was the first time, we thought, well, let's do it. Let's go all the way to Santiago. And then the second time was a few years later, but we really wanted to do the Camino Frances to be able to compare it to the coastal route. But also we were really interested in hearing a lot more stories, because we hadn't met that many people on the first one. Whereas on the Camino Frances, we got the opportunity to meet a lot of Irish, but also Americans, Australians, Brits, and really get a feel for the meaning of the Camino to a lot of people.
Yeah, and the camaraderie, that's sort of part of it.
Yeah, and what did you guys prefer if you hadn't been researching the book? Say, for instance, you're going back to do the Camino again and there's no book in mind. Did you prefer the solitude, the tranquility of the Portuguese route, or did you prefer the camaraderie and social aspect of the French way?
Yeah. they both look, let me say something first too. You asked before about, you know, were we walkers before. I still don't think of myself as a walker. Even though I've done, you know, 2,500 miles of Camino, because I always had this picture of the walker as being the sort of hairy-legged guy with a huge pack and living in a tent and eating scroggin and all that sort of stuff. And we have a very civilized way of walking the Camino. But look, each of the Caminos, we walked the Camino del Norte, we walked the Chemin de Cluny in France, then the Poi route, then the Camino del Norte and the Camino Primitivo, and then second time around we walked the Camino Frances. And look, every one of those had their own particular charms. The Camino Primitivo is a wonderful sort of balance between the solitude and the environment that you're walking in. The French route is, I think, the nicest part for just sheer natural environment. And the Camino Frances, it just has, as Anne said, that spiritual, why people are there, that very human aspect to it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to disagree with you when you say you're not a walker. Judging by the list of Caminos you've racked up, we've got a lot of avid listeners that are big Camino fans, and I think quite a lot of them might be jealous when they hear you list off the different routes you've done. So congratulations. I'm officially labelling you a walker. So, guys, the Camino is absolutely paramount to the book, and that's why I suppose you're talking to me about it today, and we can share our stories about it. And the book is full of accurate descriptions about the Camino. So, could you fully immerse yourself on it when you were on the trail, or did research kind of get in the way? Not get in the way, but were you so focused on note taking that perhaps you didn't get to experience it as just a normal pilgrim would?
Look, the first time we went on it, look, we didn't even know why we were going on it. It took me a long time to really get to that reason. Part of it was the sort of a bit of a midlife. What do I do with the rest of my life? Do I really want to keep walking 12-hour days, which was in academic psychiatry? And as passionate as I am about it, the answer really to that was no. Part of the answer for that was some of the stress of work and the things that I'd been dealing with. And the Camino was just magic from that point of view. And I think that's why a lot of people do it. And I think in particular, what we absolutely found on the first one, by the first 3 or 4 weeks, getting into the rhythm of what I call forced mindfulness, which you were so aware of your surroundings that you could lose hours and not even realize that they'd gone past. But you were so much part of the environment. That was such a magic experience for both of us because we're usually in the heads type people. So absolutely, I had no social media contact or anything, and I would recommend that strongly to anyone doing the Camino to really experience and keep out of contact with the world. We're a little different on our second one.
Yeah, the second one we were researching, but I don't think that was in any way a distraction. We're just, probably paying more attention, and that's got to be a good thing. Not negative at all. I would say, as Anne says, that social media is a far, far bigger distraction to the purpose and spirit of a pilgrimage than is researching a book.
Okay, yeah, I can totally get that, guys. And it's something that we always preach here in terms of people that are walking the Camino, just taking that opportunity to give themselves a bit of a digital detox, because you know yourselves, when you get out there with nature, it's something that people in their fast-paced lives don't have an opportunity to experience. And if you're looking at it through the lens of your camera phone, it's not going to be the same. The fourth mindfulness thing is really interesting to me. I constantly hear stories about people who they get in their car and they arrive home or they arrive at work and they don't even remember driving there because they've just gone onto autopilot and they've been with their own thoughts. And that's something that I never experienced until I actually made it out onto the Camino. And it does give you time, not only, I think, for reflection, but also just to have a bit of peace of mind. Sometimes you're not necessarily thinking about anything, and that can be just as rewarding.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, something I'd say there, just to people listening, I don't want to be pedantic about this social media thing, because one of the things that the internet does do is it makes it possible for some people who couldn't get away to walk the Camino at all to do enough staying in touch that they can do that, whether it's in touch with family or perhaps people who aren't in good health, or even worst case, you've got to do something in touch with work. And all I would say to those people is, okay, set aside a certain part of each day to do that sort of stuff. Don't be trying to find a Wi-Fi connection at every cafe that you stop at.
Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I totally agree with you there. Obviously, everybody has different necessities and things they have to look after in their lives. So obviously, the characters in the books in the book have different reasons for walking the Camino as well. So Zoe in particular isn't into the religious thing. And you had said yourself, Anne, that it was not a midlife crisis, but it was a bit of finding peace and stuff like that. Do you think that there's a Camino for everybody? Do you think that everybody should walk the Camino? And did you meet loads of people along the way with just various different reasons for doing it?
Well, we saw vastly different reasons for walking the Camino. I mean, all the way from, you know, physical fitness through to a very spiritual reason for walking, or because they're coping with something for themselves in life. I think one of the things that makes the Camino different from any other sort of walk is if I'm walking in, you know, Tasmania or Australia or something like that, I can walk for several days, and all we'll talk about is the terrain, what's around us and so on. But when you meet someone on the Camino, almost the first question you ask, whether explicitly or implicitly, is why are you walking the Camino? What's your purpose in doing it? Look, there are some people who shouldn't walk the Camino because I wouldn't like to have to encounter them on the Camino. But we think, you know, we've been very lucky. I think that the effort that it requires to walk the Camino seems to filter out people who are jerks or whatever. And we met almost nobody on the Camino who wasn't, you know, a very positive part of it.
Yeah, I think there's a transformative element to it as well. I think some people who maybe are not the most social or have different kind of social anxieties and stuff like that, I think that the Camino can almost transform their mood or their attitude towards others, just because simply the fact that you're experiencing something in a group, and it's quite rewarding to be part of a collective like that.
Yeah, look, and I think also, speaking as novelists, you want your heroes to go through some form of transformation. That's, you know, that's what you do in novels. And so it was nice to take, on the one hand, Martin, an Englishman who's very non-religious. He's actually a very hard-nosed commercial sort of guy, and to see him eventually realize that he needs to take a spiritual journey. And Zoe, who's a very spiritual person, realized that there are other things, practical things in her life that she needs to get a grip on. So it was great to take these two really opposite, different people, throw in a bit of romantic comedy and so on, but also give them, you know, a change, which is the norm on the Camino, that people change. We didn't have to pretend it.
Yeah, brilliant. And the book has been doing the rounds here in the office, guys. I think I might have said that to you over email, but we've certainly noticed a couple of people skimming through the pages and having a little giggle. So that comedy element is really something that makes it even more enjoyable. We're obviously all big Camino fans here, and we all like a love story, but a little bit of comedy goes a long way as well in a book like that. So congratulations on that. So both now that we're talking a bit about the characters on the book, both characters enter into the journey, and they're both hurt for different reasons. So can you tell us a little bit about the background of both characters without, I suppose, giving anything away?
Okay, I'm going to let Anne kick that one off, but I just wanted to say something. When you mentioned that it was a comedy, we originally started Two Steps Forward as a romantic comedy because I was immersed in the whole idea of the Rosie Project, which had been a romantic comedy. And it really grew out of our hands because they're older people walking. He's in his 50s, she's in her 40s. We realized that, you know, standard romantic comedy where it's all about romantic love, people at that age often have bigger issues in their lives. And in the end, it turns out the people who read the book say they love it first because of the physical journey, which they're interested in. It's the Camino, you know all about that. Secondly, because of the psychological or spiritual journey, the transformative, you know, journey, restarting in later life. And then thirdly, they have a bit of fun with a love story in that romantic comedy. So that got sort of pushed into third place. It's there, but the physical and psychological journeys turned out to be far more important. But Anne's going to tell you about the characters. Go.
So look, Graham's already...
Sorry, you can't see it here saying, my turn,
Yeah, I'm hitting him. Oh, no, actually, the only time we argued over the book was about leaving things out. We had so many sort of scenes and people that we wanted to sort of put in it, and we didn't. We started off with, 180,000 words that we had to get down to 85. So there was a lot of editing, but we did manage it. The two main characters are Zoe and Martin, and as Graham said, we needed them to be kind of opposite in many ways, but good for each other, hence why they were going to ultimately be good for each other. And they have things to deal with in their own lives before they really can find each other. And of course, like all good romantic comedy, they hate each other and they're totally unsuitable for each other to begin with. It takes a little while for them to actually even meet up and then to actually realise things about each other. A lot of miscommunication in the early chapters. So one of them's well-kept, one of them is not. One of them is beamed into France, having never left her country of origin. And she, obviously, you can tell by my accent, I'm not American, but I've lived in America and I've spent a bit of time in Minnesota. So I actually had her originating in Minnesota in a place called Fergus Falls. And I just met someone recently from there and she couldn't believe, and she's an artist, as is Zoe. She couldn't believe that's where I'd had her from. But Zoe leaves her hometown very early and is in California and has these spiritual ideas. But her issues really, and I wanted to bring in the Catholicism of the war. A lot of people we met weren't walking, including some of the Irish, weren't walking it because they were Catholics, but because they'd heard of it, because Ireland talked about it a lot. It was more spiritual for them than religious. We didn't want to hammer home, hammer too hard the religion, but we thought we had to talk about it because there are cathedrals everywhere. There's chances to be blessed. There's crosses. It really is obviously a Catholic pilgrimage, and we're not Catholic. So my character actually has an issue with religion, it ends up, it's not so much about religion, but the stuff she has to resolve with her family of origin. And so she comes to terms with that, whereas Martin, meanwhile, has issues with his divorce that he's got to recover from.
Martin's a miserable sod from Yorkshire who's bitter about his divorce, when it's a cart that you pull behind yourself instead of carrying a backpack. And you might have seen guys on the Camino with carts. So Martin's got the ultimate cart and he's going to walk the Camino to prove it so he can patent his design and make a bunch of money. So it's a real quixotic quest, but they're the two big difference extremes. Zoe, spiritual walk, unprepared. Martin, a commercial walk, and he's prepared it like an assault on Everest. So they're really and if you're reading it, of course, it gives you a real chance, I think, to see how you might walk the Camino yourself, what the extremes of accommodation, of preparation and so on are.
And just with the other characters, the third main character is Bernard the German. And he was originally inspired by our Belgian boy, but his character ended up changing completely. But we wanted to show sort of different aspects of younger people walking it. And then, of course, we have the five Brazilian women, who we did walk with five Brazilian women, but the real women didn't speak very much English, so we actually never got to know anything very much about their story. But they did introduce us to caipirinhas, hence the cocktail theme that they bring into the book.
Okay, very good, very good. So you found inspiration for the characters through people that you met on the Camino, but it sounds like that was just very much the seeds of the characters. They kind of grew as you began to develop them yourselves for the purposes of the novel. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right. You've used all the right words: inspiration, seeds. So there's nobody we met who's in the pages of the book. People are combinations of people we met, but people who've read the book and have walked the Camino will say, oh, we met someone just like that or that sort of thing. So we've tried to, it's a beauty of fiction that you can get a denser sort of concentration of stories than if you've just done one walk and talking about the real people.
Did you tell people that this is what you were doing when you were out there doing your research?
We did the second time because it had pretty much was finished. We'd certainly done a full draft by the time we looked at the second time. And that led to a lot of chatter and interest. And we'd arrive on the Camino Francis. We'd arrive somewhere and everyone would go, because they were obviously faster walkers than us, oh, my God, you're the Australians writing the book. So it just went throughout the Camino about us.
Okay, amazing. Incidentally, guys, how well known is the Camino in Australia?
Pretty well known now. Look, I think our typical reader of the book, a person who turns up to a book event or something like that, will say, I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it. So the average knowledge of the Camino is heard of it, know somebody who was going to walk it or has walked it or something like that, but don't know the practicalities, the ins and outs. So that's why they find Two Steps Forward, or I imagine any memoir, fascinating, because it gives them the details of how it's actually done.
Okay, brilliant. So congratulations on the book, guys. It is an international bestseller now, and it's been optioned for a film by Ellen. Are you able to speak about that?
I can tell you everything we know, which, you know, Hollywood is not great at keeping writers informed, but Ellen DeGeneres, in conjunction with Fox Searchlight, major studio, have optioned Two Steps Forward for a feature-length movie. It's out to adaptation screenwriters at the moment, but we have learned with the Rosie Project and with The Best of Adam Sharp, both of which are optioned, and some of Anne's novels, Medea's Curse, Dangerous to Know, optioned for television. You can't celebrate with a drink until the cameras roll.
Absolutely, absolutely. But look, guys, I'm rooting for you. I certainly hope it gets made into a film. We are well due a Camino film. It's been so long since The Way, which absolutely skyrocketed the popularity of the Camino, and I think this one will be absolutely perfect for the big screen. So just before I leave you, you said you're working on some new books at the moment. Are you able to give us any details about them?
We are. They're not Camino books, and I need to say that we are hoping to do another Camino book together down the track on one of the other routes, but that's very hazy at the moment. So Anne's current book is?
I've just published This I Would Kill For, which is the third in a Natalie King psychiatric. She's a psychiatrist. But the fourth one I've just done is set in rural Australia, called The Long Shadow, which I hope to be out next year. But just going on from what Graham was saying, to write another Camino book, we have to do the walk first. So we've scheduled in for next year to walk from Cluny in France to Rome. So we may or may not end up writing a book on that, but we hope to.
And my new book, which I was working on until about 10 minutes before I started talking to you, is called The Rosie Result. So it's the third in the Rosie trilogy, following on from the Rosie Project. And we expect that'll be out in the UK in 2019.
Okay, brilliant, guys. That's excellent. Thanks so much for talking to us today. I really enjoyed it.
I'm delighted talking to you.
A pleasure.
Okay, well, best of luck with your future projects, and we will be picking them up on the bookshelf quite soon, I think.
Thanks very much.
And buon Camino to the listeners.
Yeah, buon Camino, and bon chemin for the French ones.
Buon Camino, guys, buon Camino. So thanks to Graham and Zoe again for joining me here on the podcast. You can, of course, pick up their books, including Two Steps Forward, on Amazon or in any good book retailer. If you want to contact us about more information on the treks that Graham and Anne did, or indeed for any Camino information, we'd be delighted to talk to you. Just contact the travel team at www.caminoways.com.